I know I'm not going to be here forever. But at the same time, I might be here longer than tomorrow. I might be here longer than next year, maybe here longer than 2 years from now. So finding a balance of how do I prepare myself for the future as much as living for today?
Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third. I'm your host, Dawn Hunter, and I'm so glad you're here. Have you ever felt like your worth was tied to how much you produce, achieve, or accomplish? Like slowing down, even for a moment, might make everything fall apart. In this episode, I'm talking with psychotherapist and coach Damonte Whiting about people-pleasing, high achievement, healing old beliefs, and learning how to prepare for the future without missing your life in the present. Let's get into it. Hello, Damonte, and welcome to Work is Third.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you and hearing about your work as a psychotherapist, but also transitioning into leadership coaching. But before we do all that, I'm wondering if you can kick us off by sharing a word to describe how you're doing today.
Energized.
Oh, energized. Okay.
Yes, I'm feeling buzzy today. So this is exciting.
Tell me more. Is there some reason that you're feeling energized that you can share?
Yes. I have, over the years, I've constantly put myself in putting in places where I'm stretching myself to expand and do more. And every time I do that, the feeling of excitement and anxiety kind of come together. And so I'm always in the space of both, and it's energized for me. So,
well, I like that. The excitement and the anxiety, when that space in between is so powerful sometimes, and it can feel really energizing. It's like, you know, you're on your growth edge.
Yes. And it feels good to be there because it's been a long time coming. So to be where I am today, and doing what I'm doing now, this is what I've been dreaming of for so long. So to be here, it's like you have that excitement for what's next and also that fear of this could all go wrong.
I find myself in that boat, having started this podcast, started my own company last year, that I often feel the same way, which is this could all go wrong. And then I need to have a backup plan.
Yes, exactly. So. So this is cool.
You mentioned that you are excited to be where you're at now, that this is a dream of yours that's long been in the making. Yeah. Tell me more about the dream and where you were, you know, let's start with, what has that journey been to be at this place you're at today?
I'll say it from the dream standpoint. Something tells me that from, I want to say middle school-ish age, I kind of knew where I wanted to go. I knew I wanted to be in the psychology field. I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. But as time went on, I realized that the part of psychology that I enjoyed was the interaction between people, you know? And so I didn't have to be a psychologist to work with people. I could be a psychotherapist and work with people. And that's more of where I wanted to go. That was an interesting journey because it's this weird, it's like a hat's thought, right? That I want to be a psychologist, but at the same time, it's not where I want my life to go now. Because I can see what the amount of work and the amount of toll it will take on me. So I'm not ready. This is the thought that happened to me. I'm not ready now. But it's strange that it happened to me then. And so when I went to school, I got my bachelor's and I was going for my bachelor's in Spanish, actually, not psychology. Yeah, that's a whole other whole life. So how do I put this? How much do I want to disclose?
Always the tricky question.
It's so long. The history is so long. I kind of want to get to the meat of it. So I will just say this. I'm from Virginia. I had friends from a lot of different ethnic backgrounds. And one of my best friends was Puerto Rican. And he spoke Spanish. It was the only time I ever heard Spanish. And then when I got into, I think, middle school, high school, I can't remember. Middle school started. We had a choice to learning another language, and I chose Spanish, and I did really horribly in it. And then for the first year, I think it was it sixth grade? Yeah, I did horrible. I think I got a D. And then for some reason, after seventh grade, it was just straight A's. And then I went into college, and that was my major, 100% my major. I studied it to the T. I went to Spain my freshman year, and I went to Mexico my freshman year. And then Spain, my sophomore year. But while I was studying Spanish, I was also studying psychology. I've always loved how people interact with each other, you know. And I was always the observant kid who watched everyone. probably because growing up where I grew up, seeing how people interact with each other helped me to understand how to interact with people and be safe. You know what I mean? So I just, you just get, it's one of those skills that you do it long enough, you just get good at it, you know? And so I just got good at it. And then while I was studying Spanish in college, I was also studying psychology. And something happened my junior year of college. I was diagnosed with cancer. And so, which is crazy, right? And then I took off of, I had to take off a semester as I was battling it. And when I got back into school, that's a whole other story. We can go down there if you want to. But I was out for a semester battling cancer. I came back and then I just started only focusing on psychology. I don't know why. I just did. And that's all I've been doing ever since. Went back to grad school, got my master's in clinical, and then I've been working ever since.
I have so many questions for you. I appreciate this backstory, and I'm thinking like where to begin. One is we've had several cancer survivors on the show, myself included, and wow. I can't imagine being. Yeah, but I was 40 when I was diagnosed.
Yeah, I was about 20. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that? I'm curious what that was like for you. And I don't know your age now, and I don't want to ask, but I do. Yeah. But in the time that's passed, what has that been? What has that journey been like for you? The survivorship journey.
Amazing. Amazing. I was very much a people pleaser. I was very much. It's interesting because a lot of people that I work with come from similar backgrounds. Not the cancer part, but the people pleasing, putting other people's needs before their own. You know, and making sure that everyone's okay. And I wasn't doing that for myself. I was in a relationship that wasn't the healthiest for me at the time. I was under a lot of stress at the time. And when it happened, it just blew my whole world apart, right? It was the type of cancer that they had not seen much in the U.S. So there wasn't much information to go on how to treat it. They just knew that it was really aggressive. And they also knew that the treatment would be really aggressive. And so the news that I got from the hospital was that call your family, leave school, and we got to get you in this hospital immediately. So it was interesting because the conversation was like, what are you telling me? Are you telling me I'm not going to make it? And they were like, well, this is what we can tell you. The cancer is aggressive and the treatment is even more aggressive. So you deduce what you wanted to deduce from that. And that was that. And then that's when the journey began. I was a RA in school. I had to quit my job. I had to leave campus. I went to Oberlin College in Ohio, and I ended up moving to Cleveland because that's where they had University Hospital. And it was like an experimental hospital that worked with a lot of children. And the cancer that I had was pediatric in nature. So they had the most skill, even though there were only 26 cases, but they had the most skill in how to treat it than some of the other hospitals. And so I lived in a home that was kind of like a Ronald McDonald House right across the street from the hospital. And so, yeah, that was an experience. And I would go back and forth for a year. And by some crazy miracle or something, the survival rate was like 15%, I think. By some miracle, I went in in September. I came out in May, went through the whole thing, the whole gambit, chemo, radiation, surgery. Was working in June and was back in school in September. September? Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. It was crazy. So, yeah.
And having a rare cancer, it sounds like maybe even affected your perspective even more because, you know, they're saying the odds are not in your favor. You survived and you're thriving.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And what changed was, I was telling you before, me being a people pleaser. What changed was that as I was fighting this, I couldn't do that anymore. Like, this was literally life and death. It was that aspect. And also, the doctors didn't know much what to do about it. And I can tell that was the hard part because I can tell they didn't really know what to do. And they were just kind of trying it out and see what happens. And I live in a home with other cancer patients. And so I saw what happens when that didn't work out. You know, I saw what happens when they try everything they can and then it doesn't work. And so I had to figure out a way to, how do I fight this on my own, having no skill in this and having no superpowers to beat cancer on my own. And so what I learned to do was I focused on my mind, and I focused on how to make myself feel good as much as possible, how to make myself happy, how to keep a positive mindset throughout the experience, because I felt like that's all I had, the only weapon that I had to combat this. And so when there were a lot of miraculous things that happened through this journey that the doctors didn't quite understand, I felt like I understood it because I knew that it was a piece of treatment that wasn't just fix the body. There was a large part that was fix the mind, you know, and that was my job to do.
Right. I mean, fixing the mind is probably the most challenging piece. Like you, I have been a people pleaser my whole life and have spent plenty of time in therapy myself trying to work that out. And it did not shift for me right away. Right. It's been in the last 2 years where I've really said questions. Why do I continue to do the things I do the way that I do them? Right. Why do I have these patterns? Where do they come from? Really interrogating that and then saying, is this the healthiest way that I can live?
Yeah.
And that comes to fitness, too. And I found, and I've shared this with other people, I will sometimes, if somebody's like, oh, can we do a meeting? And it'll be at the same time as my yoga class or my Pilates class or whatever, going to the gym. And then I'll say, sure, I can do that another time. But the reality is I can't do that another time because I am busy. If I bump something, it's just off the calendar.
Yeah.
And I was like, got to stop doing that.
Yeah. I definitely had to reclaim my time. But from, it's so funny, from before I got cancer to after the cancer, it's like two different people. Like I don't have a bucket list, put it that way, because everything I've ever wanted to do, I just did it, you know? Yeah. And I lived my life that in a way that was just, you know what? I wonder what this would be like. Okay. You know, like I just got my first motorcycle. I just went on a 600-mile ride to Nevada this past weekend. So that was interesting, being that I hadn't done that before. I used to box in high school. I got back into boxing recently. I DJed in college. I was a part of a dance team, like a salsa dance team after that. What else did I do? I just did a lot of random things that have interest me just because, you know. And as a result, I feel like I'm in that place in my life where it's just like, you don't have that life where you're thinking, I wish I had done this or I wish I could do this, because I'm always in the present, I guess, because there's this knowledge that I know I'm not going to be here forever. And there was a conversation I had with myself on my last day at the hospital. I just remember looking around and looking at the bed, looking at the wall, looking at the TV, looking at whoever was across from me, and like, and just telling myself, you're going to be back here someday, just like this. And so between now and then, you better do everything.
You've got to do everything and really embrace the opportunity that life gives us to explore all these amazing things in the world and all these amazing people. Yeah. And I love that I don't love motorcycles, but I love that you got a motorcycle and you went on this trip because it was a thing that you wanted to do. What else have you been doing that has filled you up?
Has filled me up? I'm in an amazing relationship with my wife. And that's amazing because I think it's a part of the people-pleasing thing. I stopped trying to make other people happy and I started trying to figure out what made me happy. And that was a long journey because that's not how I grew up. And so that meant making a lot of changes, making a lot of difficult changes. So if there's a person in my life that doesn't fit in that life, not pretending that they do, and then letting them go on their journey and me going on my journey. And through that process, that's how I met my wife. And that's one of the best decisions I've made. And it's one of the things that made me the happiest, because it's like all relationships take work, right? But there's a saying, pick the right people and then let them do what they do. But the first step is picking the right person, you know? And so you have to be in a place in yourself to be able to identify where you are and what you need for yourself. And then act on it. Fear and awe.
Yeah. You have to know what makes you happy.
Yeah. And you have to get in touch with yourself to find out what makes you happy. Because for a lot of us who grew up making other people happy, we don't know. Oh, we know. But it's there's so many labels attached to it. So selfishness, you only care about yourself, you know, and you grow up with like this whole idea that sharing is caring. right? And you grow up with this idea that, like, if you focus on yourself, it's conceited. And so you have to battle those things, overcome those things to actually go, okay, now that I'm all these things that people say that I am, how do I take that and attach joy to that? Right? So how do I take that and attach peace to that? You know, one thing I've worked with my clients is that you don't have to get rid of the guilt, because the guilt is the identifier. It's letting you know you're on the right path. Because if you were taught to feel guilty when you focus on your own needs, you're going to feel guilty when you focus on your own needs. And so for a lot of us, it's like, that's how you know you're on the right path.
Right. That sounds so practical when you say it that way. And it's the truth that if it elicits a feeling in you, and it's a negative feeling that you're trying to deal with, then that's telling you something. That's saying, like, you were taught something, you were taught to react to it in this way. And can you explore where that comes from? Mm-hmm. I'm really curious, actually, because it seems like we probably had similar things in our backgrounds. And I also, for me, part of the people pleasing was about respect for authority.
Yes.
And doing what you're told. And yeah. How much that has played out in my personal and professional life, right? And just how I relate to authority figures at work, how I relate to people I've met. Is that similar for you?
Yes. But I guess with my experience around authority, I heard it. This is how you're supposed to treat authorities. But for me, I was more the oppositional one. I was more oppositional in the sense that, like, okay, what makes you the authority? Well, because I'm older than you. Okay, well, at some point I'll be older too. You know, what makes you the authority? Well, because I know more than you. Okay. If that's true, then okay, I'll give you the authority of that. But I don't just give it to people, you know, or I didn't just give it to people, because I saw a lot of people who were in that position that didn't do it well. And it affected me directly. And so as I became more able to take care of myself, I started making decisions for myself and became the authority for myself. I guess that makes sense. So, like, I was more of the fighter than the, don't get me wrong, I was still a people pleaser because that's all I learned. But at the same time, I got a lot of flack because I didn't believe everything that was told to me. I didn't believe that because you say the sky is blue, it's blue. Oh, let me see for myself. No, you can't see. Just listen to what I say. It's like, I don't want to live my life that way. You know, I think that contributes to how I've lived my life, because I want to see things for myself. I want to see, this is road that goes here. This is road that goes here. And people say, don't go down that road. Why? Because it's dangerous. Well, how dangerous is it? Let's see. You know, either it is or it isn't, because your experience of that road is not mine.
Right. But I like how you said become your own authority, because I think so many of us look to others for permission to do life.
Yeah.
Right. We look to other people to fit in, right? To meet other people's expectations, to meet social standards, to be on a path that we were told that we should be on. You know, it probably would have been very easy for you to, if you hadn't gotten ill, right, that you might have stayed on the path to be a Spanish major. And then what would your life look like? Would you be teaching? You're right. And all these things happen. And it's like having that agency to say, I can still make the choices ultimately about what my path looks like, as opposed to being, I don't want to say a victim of your fate, but like, as opposed to being controlled by something beyond yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So do you have a big family, or you have siblings?
I have an older sister, younger brother, which was an interesting experience, because I was the oldest, middle, and youngest. So that's a unique experience, because I was the middle child with my mom, because my younger brother, his dad is not mine. And so I have my older sister, me, from the same father, and then my younger brother. And I was the middle child, but I was also the oldest male. So I was responsible for my younger brother, whereas my sister wasn't as responsible for me. So I was the oldest in that regard. However, in my dad's home, I was the youngest, because my sister was the oldest with him. And so there's so many different dynamics that happen, because the moment I leave this place, I'm now in this role. So it makes it a lot easier to be able to relate to people from different backgrounds. Because I think that, like, not only the family that you grow in impacts you, but also where you are in that family dynamic also impacts you. You know,
I think about that a lot because I have a younger brother. It was the two of us. And I'm the older one. And so I definitely have all of the first child traits. But my husband, he is the oldest son for his mom and her oldest child, her first child, but the fifth, I think, child of his father. And so it is a different dynamic because it's like you're the oldest child according to one parent, but you're child number five for another parent. And so how they treat you is going to vary. It's going to be different. Like you're not going to be a typical first child.
Exactly.
For someone who grew up only being the first child, as opposed to someone right. who grew up where there were other siblings, half siblings. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
What were some of the ways that you think that, because it sounds like you said that has helped you to relate to people better. How do you see those dynamics from when you were growing up, how they affect how your ability to relate to people now?
Because of the work that I do, I work with a lot of people who fit in different parts of that spectrum. And so with the oldest, you're going to deal with the more I'm in control of things, personality. With the middle, you're going to deal with the more, for me, as the middle, I was more distant. So I noticed that with the middle child, they're the more balanced one. You know what I mean? Like they didn't get a lot of attention. So they may be the more artistic one. They may be the one that's more like in their own world. And they also have a certain personality when it comes to dealing with people. And then with the youngest is interesting too, because they have a lot of different parents oftentimes, you know, you have your parents, you have the oldest sibling, you have the sibling just before you, and everyone has an opinion about how you should live your life. And they often tend to be the ones that have the most difficulty when it comes to, what's the word I'm going to use? Like claiming their identity, you know, because everyone's always been telling them who they are and who they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to move, you know? It's funny because a lot of them, no matter where you are in the spectrum, a lot of the issues are the same, but not the same. So like the oldest deals with anxiety, but not the same anxiety that the youngest deals with or the middle one, right? The oldest deals with depression, but not the same as the middle or not the same as the youngest, you know? And it's I don't know. I find it fascinating.
When you said youngest, the first thing, when you were paused for a second, the first thing that came to mind for me was self-direction.
Yeah.
Because when you're younger and then you have older siblings and you have both your parents, maybe you also have grandparents who are around. If you're in an intergenerational household, like everybody's telling you what to do and who to be.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to figure out what it is that you want for yourself.
Yeah.
How does this play out in their conversations with your clients? And now you're transitioning into leadership coaching. Does this kind of philosophy and this understanding of these family dynamics, how much does that come into your work with your clients?
Yeah, well, they tend to be, the clients that see me tend to be the oldest. And they tend to be the ones who kind of got away from, how do I put it? They had the most responsibilities and they are the most responsible one in their household. They're the ones who tend to be the high achievers. They're the ones who tend to be the hard workers that like put in overtime all the time. The ones who own their own companies, but live in that company. You know what I mean? Like the company doesn't exist without them. Especially in their mind, work-life balance tends to be terrible. Sharing the load tends to be terrible. Trust issues are often difficult to have. Self-doubt is pretty high. Anger issues tend to be pretty high. But those are the ones, those are the people who tend to gravitate more towards me and the ones who tend to have a lot of success because I understand what they're going through, you know? Like I get all the process, but it's that group, the ones who are I was the good kid. Like in the family. Not when I say good, I was the one like did well in school, the ones that the teachers like. When you get a note home from the teachers, like, oh, DeMonte did really well. I was that kid. And so a lot of my siblings got compared to me. And those people tend to gravitate towards me as well. You know, it's a population that doesn't tend to seek out help much because it's a sign of vulnerability, it's a sign of weakness to ask for help. They'd learned early on that you don't ask for help, either because your parents are too busy, either because the expectations on you are pretty unrealistic. And the expectation is that you will just figure it out. And so you learn to just figure it out. And you don't learn to ask for help. So you don't do it, you know? And so when they come to me, it's usually because like they're stuck. They don't know what the next level is. Or I have all the success that I've achieved. I don't feel anything. Like, this is not supposed to feel like this. I'm supposed to be happy. Why am I depressed? You know? So those are the people that tend to come see me.
Now, I've been a person who also learned from a young age not mm-hmm. to ask for help. This is, I think, same thing, right? Older sibling dynamics. Some of it's cultural.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wonder if there isn't a heavy difference between men and women, especially on that piece of not asking for help. You know, I think part of it is my dynamic being like, I'm the oldest, like, and I grew up in the 80s, right? Go figure it out. Yeah. Be home when the lights come on, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And it's different, I think. I'm just curious your perspective working with men, you know.
Yeah, men is, I have to be careful when I talk about difference between with men and women, but I think that with men, we kind of have this understanding that no matter what, you have to be a man, whatever that means to whoever, whatever environment you grew up in, right? And so sometimes that means suck it up. Sometimes that means figure it out. It's interesting because if I grew up in a household with me, my brother, and my sister, the expectation is that once you're 18, you go figure it out. And because you're a man, you will be able to figure it out. There's no education on what to do as a man. You're supposed to just know this stuff. And so you grow up thinking, I'm supposed to just know this, so why don't I know this? I don't ask for help. You just keep looking. And hopefully you find good influences that can guide you on the right path, but sometimes you don't, you know? Luckily for me, I think that I really wanted to do well within the guidelines of society. You know, I really wanted to do well. Yeah, I really wanted to do well. But I have a lot of family that didn't go that path. We all wanted to do well. We all wanted to get out. But how we figured out how to get out was different for everybody. Mine was, oh, wow, I'm doing really good with the school thing. Oh, wow, the teachers really like what I have to offer. Wow, this is kind of cool. Wow, I get a chance to travel because of this stuff. Oh, wow, I'm able to do this thing. Let me keep doing these things. And that kind of led to the work field also, right? But the opposite side of that coin is that that's all work. That's all thing that I can produce. That's not me as a person. Mm. You know what I mean? And so there's this fear that you have to like what I do to like me. And so I cannot fail at what I do, because if I fail at what I do, I fail at people embracing me as a person, you know? And a lot of the people that I work with are the same way. It's work first, then you second, you know, produce, make. And then if you do that good, great, good job. But if you don't, you failed. And you can't fail because you already worry about being a failure, period. What you do is never good enough. You never learned that it was good enough. You learned that there's always more to do. And so you're always trying to do more to be good enough. But you can't do more to be. You do more to do more. You be to be. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Wait, I want to understand this phrase. I want to understand. You do more to do more. You be to be. No, tell me more.
Yeah. If I am, for example, let's say I've learned that if I work extra hard, people think I'm a good person. Oh, he's a good kid. He's bright. He's, you know, he's really smart, blah, blah, blah. But that's what I do. But like, I can't be a better me. I'm the best me that I can be. You see what I'm saying? I can do more. I can always do more.
See, where my brain was going was, if you do more, it also encourages you to keep doing more, as opposed to if you just be. That gets reinforced also, right? So choosing being over doing.
Yeah, you can do like, okay, I wish I could find a good example right now. But it's like, I want my company to succeed. So I work hard for it to succeed, right? There's some certain aspects of what I can do that will help that company succeed, but there's certain things outside of my control. So it's not always that if the company doesn't do as well as I want it to, it's not always that I didn't do enough. It's not always that like I didn't do the best that I could do. Sometimes that's just what it is. And so part of the growth sometimes is acceptance.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes it's about acceptance that you've done the best you could do and that it is enough. Right? And that is an external look at what's actually internal. If I never feel like what I do is good enough, I never feel like I'm good enough because of the connection between what I do and who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes accepting that I've done enough and it chips fall where they may, it's also looking at my inside that I feel like I am enough and it chips fall where they may.
I saw this, I follow someone and I love the way she put it. She said, the best thing I ever did was let go of outcomes, not attaching outcomes to anything. And it was a real mindset shift for me to think about, you can do, but there are just things that are just not in your control. And if you let go of a particular outcome that you want, and you just enjoy the process and enjoy being in that moment and enjoy doing what you're doing, it doesn't matter what the outcome is.
And I work with a lot of people whose expectations aren't realistic. So it's like, when I say not realistic, what I mean is I need to work till my company survives, right? I need to save all my money so I don't become broke. But here's the thing though. I work, save all my money, right? So make sure I'm in a good place. But I won't buy myself a pair of shoes, because if I buy that pair of shoes, I'm going on a spiral of destroying everything that I built. How realistic is that?
Right.
Right. And so this is what I'm talking about. And so like the expectations are unrealistic, but you get used to that because you grew up with unrealistic expectations. So why would your expectation be realistic? You know, I don't want this whole thing to crumble. So if I take my foot off the gas a little bit, everything's going to fall apart. How realistic is that? If I spent years and decades learning to not take my foot off the gas, learning how to push and push and push, how is it the moment I stop, everything falls apart? I didn't lose that skill.
Now, this is so important because I think so many high achievers suffer from this. And you said before that a lot of your clients put work first and themselves second. And of course, I love that for this show, because this is what I want to reframe, right? Which is, when you hear that work is third, what does that mean to you? It's not to say that we don't have to work. Like you're saying, you're going to work. All of us feel not just the need to work, but we also, because of the way our world is structured, we have to work. But we can prioritize doing things that, as we back earlier in the conversation, that make us happy, that make us joyful, that enable us to do work in a way that supports the rest of our life. And I'm curious about how you work with people to get to that point where they say, I'm going to let go of outcomes. I'm going to be more present. I'm not going to focus on achieving as a sign of worth.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help people to navigate that conversation with themselves?
It's an interesting process. You have to first understand why they believe the way they believe in the first place, and they have to understand why they believe what they believe. So a lot of the beginning of the work that I do is digging. I'm pulling out as much information as I can. I'm going all the way to the root of all this stuff. And trying to understand them from their perspective as best as I can. Because a lot of the issues that we have aren't what is the reality, it's what's our reality. And so once I understand their perspective from their perspective, then I can take that information and give it back to them in a way that they can see. There are no coincidences. So a lot of things that you experience in life, you experience for a reason. And a lot of it has to do with your upbringing and what you experienced in life growing up. And affects how you see things. And people get that, but your mind is always thinking about so many things. So even though you get it, you haven't gone to the minute details of understanding that piece to then be able to take that information and change your life. So that's what we do. I go all the way into this, all the details about everything. And then we look at it, we take it apart, we pick it apart, we see how all the pieces fit together. And something about that process changes everything. You know what I mean? It changes everything. And then once we have an understanding of why we do what we do and how it's affecting us every day, now you have the ability to decide, what part of my life do I want to continue as it is, and what part do I want to change? Because I already know why it is the way it is. Do I want it to continue to be that way, or do I want it to change it to something else? Because I have the ability to deal with that now. That makes sense. Yeah. Let me give you a story that will help. Let's say I am a child. Let's say 5 years old, right? 5-year-old child. I got my first A that I felt like I earned. I run home to my dad and I'm jumping up and down and I go, oh my God, I got an A, and he hits me as hard as he could possibly hit me. And then I leave. Why did he hit me? I'm asking you, why did he hit me?
Well, I guess my first thought is, like, you interrupted something that he thought was important for him to be doing.
Interrupted something he thought, right?
Didn't want to hear what you had to say.
Mm-hmm. Didn't want to hear what I had to say, right?
That, yeah. And then I was thinking, it's not something that was important enough to be interrupted over or to be bringing to their attention. So, yeah.
Remember, though, I'm 5. So I'm going,
yeah.
Maybe I was too loud. Maybe I was running in the house. Maybe I was too excited. maybe lots of different things. But let's say I go with this. I go with, you know what? I was too excited. I was way too excited. Next time I get an A, I'm going to be real calm. I'm going to be real relaxed when I go talk to him. So next time I get an A, I go real quiet in the house, right? And I go, Dad, I got an A. And he's super duper excited. He picks me up in the air and he throws me and he's like, takes me out for ice cream. What have I learned?
You've learned to dampen your enthusiasm and not to celebrate your own win.
There you go. So now, 20 years later, I'm having problems at work. I've been working this place for like, I don't know, 10 years, and people don't really know me because they don't understand. I don't really hang out with people. I don't really talk that much. I kind of keep to myself. Whenever they go out, like have festivities and stuff like that, I don't really go. And if I do, I'm like, I kind of keep quiet. You know what I mean? I'm having problems in my relationship. My wife or my girlfriend feels like I don't really like her that much because I say I do, but nothing I do shows her that. Mm. Right? Think about mm-hmm. it. Nothing I do shows her that. And so now I go see a therapist. And I go to the therapist and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I feel like I'm going to lose my job. My relationship is in shambles, right? And I didn't do any. I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. I'm not quite getting it. And so the therapist talks about your life experience and everything you've been through, blah, 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 right? And then the therapist realizes maybe there's something there with your, have you ever talked to your dad about this thing that happened? And you go, nah. I was like, what? Are you in a good enough relationship with him now that you feel like you can't talk to him? And he goes, yes. Okay. So let's do this. Why don't you go talk to your dad? Tell him about the incident that happened and ask his opinion about what took place. So then let's say me as a kid, I'm an adult now. I go to my dad. I go, hey, remember that time when I was like 5 years old? I came to you and I brought my homework and you hit me. And as I'm telling him the story, he cuts me off like, I'm so sorry. I got mugged 5 minutes before I walked in the house by some guy that took all my money. And when you ran up, it freaked me out. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Got it? Do you know how much of your life has been based on that one thing?
Right.
This is what it's like. This is what it's like. Because everyone has their own life experience, but they also have how they interpret that experience. And that is so much more impactful about their future than what actually happened, their perception of what happened. So when you change the perception, you change the reality.
And even though these are things that also happen to us as adults, right? The way that we interact with people, we get messages, we get feedback, right? About our behavior from other people. But really what is impactful is that we're leading with the behavior that we learned as children.
There you go. Exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
And so when you get that and you understand it, because we experience things all the time. We experience people experiences all the time, but we think they're all based in right now in the current and the present. They're not. Not the things that matter, not the things that are deep. They don't. It's not today. Today wasn't the first time you experienced that. You've been experiencing this for a long, long time. You just don't know why.
Isn't there a sculpture? I can't remember where it's like two people talking, but then it's like this representation of like children behind them, basically. Like it's like you're really talking to the other person's younger self. Like we're not really talking to each other. We're talking to the younger versions of ourselves that show up in this body now.
Yeah. And that is so important to understand that, because once you understand that in yourself, you understand that in other people. And you stop taking things personal that are not personal.
Right.
Your experience of me is only partly your experience of me. A lot of it is what you've already brought before you even met me. This is why sometimes people don't like you and you don't know why. Because it's got nothing to do with you.
It's hard for people to let that go, but I do believe it's one of the most important life lessons that you can embrace, which is really that nothing that other people do is about you.
Yeah, most of it is not. But it's not that hard. Once you get, again, once you understand yourself to that minute level, it's hard to then see other people differently, because we see the world, but we're the center of the world. So if I think this way, you must also think this way, which is why when you don't do something that I would do, I don't understand why you didn't do it. Right? I'm always the center of the world. So once I understand myself to that level, how can I then not see you the same?
I tell people this story about my relationship with my husband, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will relate to this, in that we used to, I would say have conflict over like dishes, right? And I like the dishes being done, right? And he's like, yeah, they'll get done when they get done. And it was like probably 5 years ago, I was talking to my therapist and I just had this light bulb moment where it was like, I'm unhappy because I'm expecting him to do what makes me happy, but he's not me.
Yep. And he doesn't live in your mind. You have no
idea.
He
doesn't live in my mind. And if I let go of my happiness resting on him doing the dishes, then I'm happy. And I tell him all the time, like, I do the dishes because I want the dishes done. And right. And like, I let go of this idea that we have to split it or share it or whatever, because it's not his thing. It's my thing.
Yeah. Whatever is his thing, he does fine. It's the things that's your thing that he doesn't do as well as you want to. Yeah.
Right. We have to stop expecting other people to do the things to make us happy.
Right.
We have to know what makes us happy, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it's interesting too, in terms of communication, sometimes we expect people to read our mind, partly because we don't want to have that potential conflict of expressing how we feel, because somewhere down the line, we learned that communicating, having a conflict is a bad thing, you know? So like, if this person could just read what I'm thinking and just understand how I feel, they would get it. And then when they don't, we resent them. We get frustrated with them, mainly because, but the real reason is, well, I don't want to really confront them on that, because then I'm going to feel bad if it doesn't turn out the way I want it to.
But that's really important, because I think also that's a learned, I mean, this is me, right? I think that's also a learned behavior in childhood, which is, who are you safe bringing your emotions to, and who are you and not safe bringing your emotions to, right? And then we carry that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, you carry it until something changes, or until you just, it's when you create a belief, it is so powerful that to change that belief, you really have to do some deep work. And if you don't know are not willing to go that deep, or you don't know how deep you need to go, then you don't really change that belief, right? At least not long term. It's some deep work that needs to be done. But once you change the beliefs, and you understand that it's only one belief and there are many other out there that you can adopt, I feel like you're on the path to changing life.
Right. You got to get at the root of those beliefs, put new beliefs in place, and then constantly reinforce those new
pathways.
Yeah.
Exactly. You have to constantly be reinforcing it, because the original belief that you have has been reinforced for so long that to change that belief, you have to reinforce that at the same level. It's like working out with one arm, right? That arm is so strong. You can't expect to lift something else with the other arm unless you're willing to do the same amount of work, you know? And you might have to stop working this one to work this one for them to even out, you know?
Right.
But that's what it's like.
So I've really been enjoying this conversation, and I've appreciated both your perspective working with clients, but also sharing your own journey and your own story. And part of this podcast is really also about understanding the ways that people take care of themselves and share the ways that they do that. My hope is to share the message that it's possible for all of us. And so I have four questions I ask every guest, if you are willing to also answer them. The first question is, what is something that it is easy for you to say yes to?
Anything exciting. Anything that excites me.
I'm not surprised, given your motorcycle adventure and other adventures that you shared. That makes sense. That makes sense. Before I get to the next question, this is a side question. Is there anything that is exciting? Because I also, like, I love roller coasters. I've, you know, done some on the bungee slingshots and things like that. Is there something you wouldn't do?
Probably not going to skydive. Because I've done bungee jumping, right? And it's not the same, but you're still jumping out of something towards the ground. And although I did it, it was done. Would I do it again? Probably not. I have nothing to gain from it. You know, that's not the thing that ticks my buttons, you know, so.
That is my answer though, too. I will not jump out of a plane. I will do most things, not planning to jump out of a plane.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that. That's not for me.
So then the next question is, what is something that is hard for you to say no to?
Excitement. No, the thing that's hard to say no to. yeah, same thing pretty much. Yeah, if it's fun, if it's cool, exciting, I'm down, you know?
Yeah.
And so Because for me, it's like, my world right now is pretty peaceful, right? It's the way I've created it, the way I created the life that I want to live. And it's a very peaceful place to be. And so when there's something exciting comes up for me, it pulls me in a way that it's pulling at a desire that I have, right? So if it's pulling a desire that I have, why not? Let's do it. It's fine.
Well, and then you find, like, you've done bungee jumping and now you know you did it. And you're like, I don't need to do that again. But you follow that initial urge to try it, yes, which is a beautiful thing.
And I'm honest with myself. I'm honest enough with myself that if it's not for me, if it's not something that I want to do, I don't have a problem communicating that. And I don't have a problem being honest with myself and with other people. So that's why I'm saying what I'm saying.
No, I appreciate that. So when it comes to, so it sounds like you, I love your mindset around how you live your life and live it joyfully and exuberantly. But when it comes to taking care of yourself, so setting boundaries, resting, self-care, what do you do really well?
All of that. All of it. Yeah. I have a reputation. People were like, DeMonte has this box, right? Now, if you want to go play in that box, he's down. You can do, we can do whatever you want to do. But if you expect him to go outside of that box and do something he doesn't want to do, probably not going to happen.
If only we could all have that box.
It's cool because here's what I've learned this. A lot of times we step outside of that box because we're afraid that if we don't, that people will leave, that we'll be alone and nobody won't be, will want to be around us. I found that if I know what that box is and it's true and honest for me, if that person wants to be in my life, that's not going to be the one thing that takes them out of it. And if it is the one thing that takes them out of it, then maybe they're not for me. And that's okay.
Right. That's really an important lesson, that recognizing that you can be yourself. You can have the boundaries of your box and you can know what works for you. And that the people and the situations that are aligned with that will be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make an adjustment. So is there anywhere you struggle to take care of yourself or any of those things? And you could say, no, you feel like, you know, you're doing a pretty great job.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the balance, because there is a price to having seen, to know that you're not going to be here forever. Because we all know that we're not going to be here forever, but this, to walk out the door and to see the other side, the price is creating a balance of living for tomorrow while also trying to live for today. So that's the thing I struggle with, because I know I'm not going to be here forever. But at the same time, I might be here longer than tomorrow. I might be here longer than next year, maybe here longer than 2 years from now. So finding a balance of how do I prepare myself for the future as much as living for today? Because I got the present down pat. I'm here today, every day. And it's more so of, how do I stay focused on the future as well? Like far, not like 10 years down the road, but like 20 years down the road. That's the challenge. Because, that's the challenge.
I identify with that challenge. I also think there's this competing interest, right, of, like you said, doing things like saving for retirement and eating healthy and exercise, because these are all things that are going to help me to be healthy at 80 years old. But I might not make it to 80 years old. And so how am I enjoying my life today?
Yeah.
And I found that it's really one of the things I try to do is say, what routines fit me that also will benefit me, my future self?
Yeah. Win-win. I like that. Cool. I like that.
Win-win. Yeah. Okay. Well, how I would like to wrap this conversation up is to ask you, first of all, I want to say thank you for being here and for sharing your insights. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Wish we could talk longer. And I'm curious, when you hear Work is Third.
Yeah.
And when we first connected over this podcast, what did that mean to you?
I loved it.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking that you get it. That makes so much freaking sense. You get it. I saw just the title alone. I'm like, she understands. Because when you're a people pleaser, work is first, right? Because if you get what you want, then I get what I want. If the company needs everything from me, I give everything to them. And hopefully they'll give me what I want in return. When the work is third, who's first? You know what I mean? Who's second? Right? When I was in Spain, the one thing I learned there was that people don't live to work. They really don't. You know, they really, like, they work to live. And what's important to them is the connection. What's important to them is community. you know, and friendship and relationships. And that's, at the end of the day, if you've been there, I've been there. When I'm on the hospital bed, potentially deathbed, I'm not thinking about how much money I made. I'm not thinking about any items that I have. I'm thinking about who's in my circle. I'm thinking about what have I left behind for people that I care about. I'm thinking about how they're going to be with me if I'm gone. But it's always about the people that I want in my life, right? It's never about the things. Yeah, work is important, but what's more important is the people that you, is your connection to people. It's community. It's like, it's relationship, right? I was like, I just remember thinking she gets it. And I didn't know why you get it, but now I know why you get it. Now I know why.
Yeah. Like I said, it's my dream to help other people realize like this can be the way you approach life too.
Right? Yeah. And when they get that, it is so amazing when it clicks. Therapy can be hard, can be really hard, but when it clicks and they get it, you're good. And when they start using language that's different, when they start saying things that show you that, oh, they've changed the way they think about things, they're good. They're good to go. And then even on the last session when I think, you know what? I think I got what I need. It's the best feeling in the world because it's not a coping skill. It's not something they learn to cope with going on right now. Their life has changed. And not only their life changed, the people that they interact with has changed as well. You know, because for our relationship to continue the way it is, I have to stay the way that I am. The moment I change, our relationship changes.
That's a good reminder. Yeah, that when we change, necessarily our relationships change too.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's for the better. And sometimes it's, you know, a season is ending.
But yeah. Either way, things get better, you know?
They do. All right, Demonte, thank you so much for such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. This has been great. I appreciate it.
Many thanks to Demonte for sharing his journey. If this conversation resonated with you, I hope you'll take a moment to reflect on this question. What would change if you stopped tying your worth to outcomes? If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear the reminder that they are already enough. And remember, work is third. Put yourself first.